It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Great American Solar Eclipse started along the Oregon coast. Darkness came to Madras, Oregon at exactly 10:19 in the morning.
This is amazing!
With the moon completely covering the sun, only the sun's outer atmosphere, called the corona, was visible. Many were in awe.
Oh my gosh, it's dark!
The coolest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, that is amazing. Once in a lifetime right here.
The reaction was the same as the shadow raced across the country, hitting speeds of 1,400 miles per hour. There were big eclipse parties throughout the 70-mile-wide, 2,500-mile-long path of totality. The celestial show was over in a virtual blink of an eye. Lucky viewers were treated to more than 2 minutes of darkness. The eclipse slipped off the coast of South Carolina just an hour and a half after it all began in Oregon.
It's very weird. Yeah. Once the sun actually vanished, and watching everybody scream and have a great time was a blast.
NASA had a live picture throughout on its website. Officials said this would be the most studied eclipse in history, with a dozen major projects, many involving legions of citizen scientists. Matt Henry was among 1,500 amateur photographers with equipment good enough to upload photos to Google for an eclipse movie.
I've seen a number of things like the Northern Lights, but this is the top.
Even President Trump and his family took in a partial eclipse at the White House. But all things come to an end. The eclipse is over, and now Madras, otherwise known as Solar Town this week, is clearing out. This eclipse really, though, seemed to capture the attention of the nation, and for one day at least brought the country together. And politics seemed to take a back seat to a natural phenomenon that won't be seen again in this country coast to coast for 28 years.
All right, that was Dan Springer of Fox News. Sandy Rios with it. Did you see the eclipse yesterday? We saw it. My husband and I watched it. It was just amazing to me how fast it moved. It really did. The moon's, you know, passage between us and the sun was so rapid, just even to the naked eye. Not naked, but with glasses on. And it was just amazing. It really was pretty overwhelming. There were some other interesting things that happened around the country. There are reports from Albany, Oregon, during totality. Most of the cows in this field in Albany, Oregon, laid down. A flock of birds took off. I heard that birds were actually very quiet during the eclipse. And then there's an interesting story from Nashville, which was right in the center of it. And this is an account from, I believe, from the LA Times. It says, as darkness fell outside the Grand Ole Opry, the band on stage stopped playing. The temperature dropped. Cicadas started chirruping in the trees. Eclipse watchers who had hidden in the shade to hide from the heat came out for one last look as the sun at dusk fell in midday and everything went dark. The moon was black and rimmed with white fire, and the crowd cheered. But then just as suddenly, a passing cloud swallowed the moon, and the crowd groaned as the sky turned dark. By the time the cloud had passed, so had the totality. The first sign of the return to normalcy was a flagpole bearing the American flag, which flowed with a faint orange of the sunrise, and soon everything felt back to normal. I felt a sense of awe about nature, the whole totality of the universe, said Lisa Wilbanks, 57, of Louisville, moments after the eclipse passed, with awe still in her voice. When the moon began blocking the sun, Wilbanks said, she was glad not just to see the eclipse, but also felt blessed and really grateful that we have seen what we've seen. Anyway, I just thought that was a very thoughtful, you know, interesting that people would clap and applaud. It's more like a holy hush, isn't it, to me? It's just the awesome power of God, the thing that transcends everything that we see, the things that we cannot control so much greater than ourselves. You know, it's just the hand of God, the touch of God. By the way, they said that at the Nashville Zoo, the giraffes and rhinos started running around like crazy. when the sun came back. So I think that's interesting too, don't you? I just wonder what that's all about. And by the way, the next total solar eclipse in the U.S. will be in 2024. So stick around. It won't be that far and we can see it again. Well, lots of things happened last night. You know that the president made a speech, and it was a very fine speech from all accounts. I think most people were surprised. He did change his plans for Afghanistan. But I'm going to let you hear him just for a second, and then we'll talk about it. Here's President Trump last night in his speech on Afghanistan.
My original instinct was to pull out. And historically, I like following my instincts. But all my life, I've heard that decisions are much different when you sit behind the desk in the Oval Office. In other words, when you're president of the United States. A core pillar of our new strategy is a shift from a time-based approach to one based on conditions. Conditions on the ground, not arbitrary timetables, will guide our strategy from now on. America's enemies must never know our plans or believe they can wait us out. I will not say when we are going to attack, but attack we will. America will work with the Afghan government as long as we see determination and progress. However, our commitment is not unlimited, and our support is not a blank check. The American people expect to see real reforms, real progress, and real results. We are not nation building again. We are killing terrorists.
All right, that was part of the speech last night. You can see it anywhere you want to on YouTube, I'm sure. He added another part of this that I wanted you to hear before I make any comments at all. This is talking about unity. Here it is.
The men and women of our military operate as one team with one shared mission and one shared sense of purpose. They transcend every line of race, ethnicity, creed, and color to serve together and sacrifice together in absolutely perfect cohesion. When we open our hearts to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice, no place for bigotry, and no tolerance for hate. As we send our bravest to defeat our enemies overseas, and we will always win, let us find the courage to heal our divisions within. Let us make a simple promise to the men and women we ask to fight in our name, that when they return home from battle, they will find a country that has renewed the sacred bonds of love and loyalty that unite us together as one.
All right, so that's just a bit of President Trump's speech last night. It was a really good speech. This is a very complex situation. And I have to say to you right up front, I'm not ready to declare what I think about this. I'm going to give you some information as I mull this all about and think about, you know, I'm not an expert on Afghanistan. How could I be? But I think there are some common sense things that need to be applied to this. And I want to talk about it just a little bit. First of all, you know that President Trump campaigned on not sending troops into Afghanistan, that we'd lost enough already. In fact, I was going to read to you, we have lost over 2,400 American troops since 9/11 in Afghanistan. And, of course, he campaigned on pulling out of that. And the tension has been that McMaster, who is the National Security Council leader, which I have significantly and frequently told you how people that I trust do not trust him. But it is his goal to send a lot more troops back into Afghanistan. He's itching to do that. He thinks that he can work out something out with the Taliban, that somehow we can make some sort of peace in Afghanistan. Others that I talk to say that is just ridiculous. I kind of come down on the side of that's ridiculous. You know, that Afghanistan is a bunch of tribes. It's a tribal country, and it's torn right now. ISIS is in there as an invader. The Taliban hates them, and the Taliban wants them out. They're happy for our help to get ISIS out, but they're not going to turn around then and be our buddies. The Taliban are Islamists. Now, they adhere to Sharia. They are not. We are their enemy as much as ISIS. It's just that they've got to get ISIS out first. They feel that's the most direct threat. So I don't see this ending well. And I don't see this being a good idea. And I don't think if I had a son or a daughter fighting, this would cause me a lot of anxiety. Let's go a little bit further with some of the comments that I want to share with you. The other thing is that you can see this is the first major speech that the president has given since Steve Bannon has left. Steve Bannon was extremely the chief strategist who resigned, 2 weeks ago, but we just found out about it Friday night. Steve Bannon was very much against sending any troops into Afghanistan for a number of reasons. There are a lot of people that are upset about this. Robert Costa, who's no fan of the president, put it this way. He said, this is a president sans doctrine, torn between his militaristic ID and his non-interventionist instincts, tilting toward the former. In other words, and to put it plainly, this is the president, I think, this is another thing that Costa said. I'll use his words. Trump is echoing many of the points Bannon made behind the scenes, but he has gone along with a version of a McMaster-Mattis plan. So McMaster and Mattis have won on Afghanistan, as they have won on most everything, it seems, right now. So we're going to be sending more troops, something like 4,000. I want to read you some other comments that will help you to kind of think about this. And these are random, so these are just thoughts to ponder on. And I'm not going to attribute the people that said these things. It's just people that are in the know. Sending several thousand additional American troops to Afghanistan would be to try to break the military deadlock in the 17-year war there, thus pressuring the Taliban to negotiate with the Afghan government. Is this their idea of winning through the sacrifice of more American lives? Than they are even more duplicitous and immoral than I thought, which is a pretty low threshold. There is no ground to be held on behalf of anyone that is worth our strategic interests and can even endure in the long term if there were any interests. We need to reassess the way we approach the Middle East. It's first and foremost an immigration problem, a Muslim Brotherhood problem, homeland security, good intel, counterterrorism, and using effective soft power to go after the money in Turkey and Qatar. Afghanistan is a bunch of mud huts. Also, draining our resources and resolve in these Islamic civil wars with multiple ungovernable tribes is what depletes our deterrent as it relates to the true convention threats for which we need a military, Iran, and North Korea. Part of why they are so emboldened, as well as their Russian and Chinese overlords, is because we have sucked our resolve and depleted our military in the Islamic civil wars. Another person says, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster back a proposal to add troops focused on training Afghan special forces. It's intended to show a U.S. commitment to stay in the country, prod Taliban fighters to negotiate to the negotiating table, and stem the increased presence of terrorist groups, including the Islamic State. Others say, I want to read this one to you. This is from a national security expert. There was absolutely no articulation of what we hope or expect to achieve with more troops. Not a word about what winning actually looks like or what our broader Southwest Asia strategy is supposed to look like. Nothing. Just nothing. If anybody thinks satisfactory outcome would be the Taliban at the negotiating table, number one, that's not going to happen. But even if in some alternative universe it were to happen, it would not turn Afghanistan into a peaceful, secure, representative society. Too many Afghans are primitive, savage, tribal jihadis, and Pakistani ISI created, backs, funds, trains the Taliban in Afghanistan. And she goes on and on. Pakistan will never let Afghanistan go because it is best leverage versus India and for status and power in the region. And the Taliban are native Afghanistans. They didn't invade. They live there. This is a disaster. And it's Mattis, McMaster, and the generals who duped the president, who, after all, really knows nothing about the region, Islam, jihad, or the various and competing interests there. And by the way, 9/11 did not come out of the Hindu Kush. It came out of Iran and Saudi Arabia. I know this is confusing, and I don't claim to understand it all myself, but I'm just telling you, people that I trust don't think this is a very good idea. I'll be back right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Different starting points. This is Ken Ham on a mission to strengthen the global church with God's Word. Creationists don't deny climate change, don't believe what Bill Nye the Science Guy claims, but we do deny the assumptions behind the claims of climate change alarmists. That's because we have a different starting point as we look at history. Much of climate change data is based off the ice cores. Now, many scientists believe these layers represent hundreds of thousands of years and include a record of our climate. They believe our climate has remained stable for 12,000 years, so a slight rise in temperature must be caused by humans. But since we start with the Bible's history, we reject the long ages of these layers. And we recognize the significance of a catastrophic event in our history. Ah, but that's for tomorrow.
Listen to this program again or view a complete transcript when you go to AnswersRadio.com. You can also sign up for daily emails from Ken Ham at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
At least 63 people were shot in Chicago over the weekend, three on the same street. 451 murdered so far this year in just one American city. Had the deaths occurred at the hands of Islamic radicals, there would be wall-to-wall news coverage. Had the deaths been at the hands of white supremacists, every major cable news anchor would be broadcasting from Chicago. But the chaos and the carnage garnered nary a blip on the evening news. Just another violent weekend in the Windy City. President Trump wants to crack down on the violence. He wants to make American cities safe again. But instead, the mainstream media is fixated on phony arguments over Civil War memorials. Anything to keep the American people distracted from the real problems facing our nation. And if you have any doubts, just ask yourself this one question. Why weren't those Confederate statues an issue during the Obama administration? Just something to think about. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
There'd be a lot of bipartisan support in Congress for this proposal. I'm proud. I'm relieved. I'm proud of the fact that President Trump made a national security decision, not a political decision. I'm proud of the fact that he listened to the generals. And most proud of the fact that he shows the will to stand up to radical Islam. To my colleagues in Congress, you will own a no vote. The next 9/11 will be your fault, not President Trump's fault, if you shoot down this plan, because this is a solid plan.
All right, that was Lindsey Graham preening about the president's plan. He's very excited. Anytime Lindsey Graham, you know, he and John McCain both have been so far off base. I have to tell you, I remember the last dust up for me with them was when they were all about arming the so-called Syrian rebels with the weapons and all kinds of military equipment. And they pushed for that and pushed for that. And John McCain kept telling us that the Syrian rebels were our friends and they were our last best hope. And now we know that we knew then that wasn't true. We knew that wasn't, I mean, he thought it was true. I'm sure he did. John McCain has some cylinders that don't fire properly. But those so-called friends turned against us, and then they had all of this sophisticated equipment. There is absolutely no way to tell how much we have wasted and how many lives we have cost by these ridiculous policies. And Lindsey Graham usually parrots what John McCain says about military things. And let me remind you that McMaster is only in the position that he's in because of John McCain. John McCain is the person who pushed his name as soon as the other general, whose name in this very minute escapes my mind, as soon as he was asked to leave, what, 2 months after serving, then John McCain rushed in and gave the name of McMaster, and it was based on that recommendation because, you know, I think there were so many establishment Republicans in the White House already surrounding Donald Trump, and Democrats too, that they urged Mr. Trump to listen to John McCain. He did. So we got McMaster. And you see how this is just amazing. And you have to say, I think President Trump has really good instincts. I stand by that. I think his natural instincts are good. But the one thing that he is not good at is understanding that the people he chooses to place around him have tremendous impact. He cannot know everything. He has to be briefed. He can't know everything about everything. No president can. He understands business. That's what he spent his life doing. But he doesn't know war in Afghanistan or whether we should arm the Syrian rebels. And so and people advising him now are people whose judgment I question. And one of the main reasons why I'm concerned about us going into Afghanistan, just my own knowledge, is that McMaster reflects that Petraeus approach to war in the Middle East, and that is we befriend the Islamists. We remember that ridiculous picture of General Petraeus in an Afghan turban, you know, sitting down with, you know, reaching out, bridging, you know, brotherhood, and allowing, as you will recall, I've talked about this on the air, about our soldiers allowing the rape of young boys within our barracks, our American compound, because we didn't want to offend the Afghans we were working with, because this is their practice, raping young boys. It's just, so that was Petraeus. That was his whole plan. McMaster is one of his pupils and believes the same thing. And until they understand the real threat of Islamic radicals and of Sharia adherents, there is no winning policy. There is none. I doubt there is in any way, because we are not going to talk Islamists who adhere to Sharia into liking us, working with us. They're not going to do that. And in, as long as they have rose-colored glasses and think that somehow our great overtures of friendship and fighting alongside of them are going to win their hearts, it's craziness. And so that bothers me a lot. I want to mention that tonight is a really big event, and I think we need to pray, because I do. I mean, not that we shouldn't always, but tonight the president's going to Phoenix, and there's going to be a rally. And here's the backstory on this. Two Facebook groups have combined 5,600 RSVPs to attend anti-Trump Phoenix protests on Tuesday. Just about 500 showed up a year ago when President Trump delivered an immigration speech there. You remember they shut down the roads? It was really quite a scene in Phoenix. And this year, these two Facebook pages have a combination of 5,600 RSVPs to come and disrupt this rally. And we know who the people are who come to disrupt. They are, many of them, I'm sure there are some people that just don't like Trump and want to come and counter-protest, and that's perfectly legitimate because that's what free speech is all about. But there are those that will come who are intent to do harm, who will attack people and make the place dangerous, and heaven only knows what. So one of the things, one of the logos that is on the Facebook page is a logo incorporating the number 45. You know, Donald Trump is the 45th U.S. president. And then it's in a mock-up of a Nazi swastika. And the other includes a graphic of Trump with Ku Klux Klan Klansmen and is advertised under the title, "White Supremacy Will Not Be Pardoned." And so this just is the most ridiculous, you know, to paint Donald Trump as a racist and an anti-Semite is just unbelievable. It just defies any kind of logic. I just can't quite comprehend why people would buy this kind of ridiculousness. You know, his comments about the rally in Charlottesville, it may not have been what people wanted, but he said there's something about both sides. I can't recall his exact words, but except for both sides. And of course, then they jump to this. No, there are not both sides when it comes to Nazis. Well, of course, it wasn't just Nazis in Charlottesville. It was Antifa, which is a total anarchist group, and other groups, Black Lives Matter, coming with the intent of doing harm. In fact, I've got another follow-up article on this morning. I talked about this yesterday, and I referred you to an article from Conservative HQ, which talked about what was really happening there. And, of course, the fact that the police just stood back, they were asked to do that by Terry McAuliffe and the other leaders of Charlottesville. In fact, I have another story here today. The article I mentioned yesterday was the Charlottesville riot a setup? I want to refer to that again because we've got it on our Facebook page yesterday. If you haven't seen it, you should read that. And here's the second part of this that was published today. How and why Virginia's Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe killed three people in Charlottesville. And they go into the details of how Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, and Jay Cullen, who was the Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security, and Brian Moran, Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security Brian Moran, dispersed this lawful Unite the Right. Okay, this was the Nazi group who, by the way, I told you yesterday, was led by an Obama supporter. Go figure. An Obama supporter who was involved with Black Lives Matter. He was organizing. No, he was invited. He was involved in the. The group that camped out, the anti-Wall Street group. And he was involved with them before he organized this rally. So it's very strange. And of course, they had a permit to march. Someone yesterday mentioned to me on Twitter that I was trying to paint the Nazis as peaceful. They were, as far as I could tell, they were peaceful. They were attacked by Antifa, but that doesn't mean I'm defending Nazis. I think the whole business is just sordid between the Nazis and Antifa and the communists who came. And the leaders of Black Lives Matter, you know, who like to chant frying like pigs in a blanket, frying like bacon, talking about police being killed. This is wickedness, and it all converged on Charlottesville. And so McAuliffe, the Democratic governor, and Secretary of Public Safety and Homeland Security Brian Moran decided up front, according to this article, that they did not want Unite the Right to protest, even though the federal courts gave them the right to protest in that public park. So what McAuliffe and this Homeland Security Secretary Brian Moran did was that they held the police back. They ordered them to stay back. They had all of this riot gear and all of this equipment, and they even, I'll start this at the beginning of this article, says the police actually allowed us to square off against each other, a Black Lives Matter protester told CNN. There were fights, and the police were standing a block away the entire time. It's almost as if they wanted us to fight each other. Where are the police? One Antifa protester said to the crowd. I don't see any police here. So this is just, of course, these are anecdotal, but it's widely reported. In fact, Doug McElway said the same thing on Fox, that there were no police around. But they stood back. They did nothing. So Terry McAuliffe and his partner, Brian Moran, decided to pull the police back. They let the Unite the Right protesters who had a permit go into the park. But when Antifa charged and other groups charged, they did nothing. So when the violence started, I'll just read some about the violence here. It says the violent leftists were allowed to bring out, unhindered by the police, a battering ram made out of plywood and reinforced with a metal stepladder. Radical leftist protesters charged the white supremacists with their handmade weapon. White supremacist enforcers managed to stop the device before it reached the demonstrators gathered around the Lee statue. But a new group of violent far-left thugs arrived, again unhindered by the police, to try to push the ram further. Other witnesses, including the Daily Caller News Foundation, reported violent leftist groups maced white supremacists to start infiltrating Emancipation Park, where the rally was held. The violent left also began throwing a variety of items at the white supremacists, such as balloons filled with urine, paint, pieces of concrete, as well as soda cans filled with concrete, food, and full water bottles. When they were out of items to throw, the violent left would search the streets for anything they could find to throw. This violence all took place completely unhindered by the police, who stood back. And shortly before 10 a.m., we noticed protesters making way for a new group marching from the east. We ran over to discover that the new group was a battalion of Antifa members from all across the country. That was from Philip Stuckey, who is a reporter with the Daily Caller, who was writing about that. So Stuckey reported that as the violence built, the police moved to the northern part of the park, where he noticed that the police in full riot gear were gathering with two armored transports that were working their way into position. So when the violence had reached a crescendo, then Governor McAuliffe ordered the previously passive police to disperse the white supremacists from the park directly into the assembled counter-demonstrators. So do you get this? Look, I'm not defending the Nazis. I'm just trying to tell you what happened. They had a lawful permit. And so the governor did not separate the groups. He, in fact, told the police to stand back, and he allowed the violent protesters, the Nazis, at least, it seems to me, intended a nonviolent protest. I know, Nazis. Who would think they'd have a nonviolent protest? But it seems that's what they ask for. They are allowed to do that because of the First Amendment. You are not allowed to have your face covered and go in and violently attack people in the public park. The police are supposed to stop that, but they did not. And so what they did instead was, because they then declared the situation too violent, and they ordered the Nazis off of the stage. They stopped their rally, but they dispersed them into the violent crowd rather than protecting their right to protest. They are Nazis, yes, but they had a right. They had a permit. They had a right to protest peacefully, which is what they were doing. So the violence just took on a new life, and that's why people feel that Governor McAuliffe and his Homeland Security Secretary bear responsibility, along with the mayor and the vice mayor of the city of Charlottesville. And so people are looking into that in Virginia, and I think you'll hear more about it. And by the way, a couple of other important pieces on this. Heather Heyer is the girl who was killed by the Nazi sympathizer in his car. Just found out yesterday, according to Cornell professor Russell Rickford, in a piece that was printed in Salon.com, that Heather Heyer belonged to the Industrial Workers of the World, which is better known as Wobblies. This is a Marxist group, socialist Marxist group. So Heather has been described before this as a paralegal from Ohio. You may recall that. That's how these pieces have been written. She was just a concerned citizen who went to counter these Nazis. But we know now that at least it appears, from what's been written here, I've seen it in two different sources, that Heather Heyer was part of the Industrial Workers of the World, which is, again, a communist organization known as the Wobblies. And so I don't know what her background is, but certainly you didn't hear that. They're not making that known. That is not to say that Heather Heyer, then, because she belonged to a communist group, deserved to be hit by a car. That's ridiculous. And, of course, that's what some people say when I made this statement and tweeted about it. That's not the point. The point is that it was not innocent people who came. The rift between communists and Nazis goes back to prior to World War II. And maybe you know, and maybe you don't know, that the Nazis, there was a beautiful government building, kind of like our Congress now. When you go to, you see the Capitol now, and the Senate on one side and the House on the other side. They had a building like that called the Reichstag, which was just beautiful. And the Nazis actually burned that building to the ground. Now, this is before they took full power, but they were trying to take power. They burned that building to the ground. And guess who they blamed? They blamed the communists, because they wanted to get rid of the communist influence. There was a very long grudge that goes on between Nazis and communists, both of them wicked. You'd be hard-pressed to look at what they have done in terms of world history and decide who was the most wicked. I'd say in terms of numbers, the communists win, because they have brutally murdered millions of people around the globe. And so this girl, Heather Heyer, the paralegal, was part of a communist group, and I'm sure she was not alone. There was a lot of wickedness that came to Charlottesville, and that may come to Phoenix tonight, and that's the point I'm trying to make. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
and seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. From a distance, the fig leaves gave Jesus the impression that there was fruit on the tree. Upon closer inspection, the tree was fruitless. Perfect church attendance and ministry activity cannot replace actual Christ-like fruit produced in our lives. From a distance, it can appear as though we're bearing fruit, but what would we find with a closer look? Are we content with fruitful appearance, or do we yearn for the real thing?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Hi, this is David Barton of Wall Builders. Happy 40th anniversary to American Family Association. Wow, what a pioneer they've been. 40 years ago, who was thinking about things like transgender or same-sex marriage or anything else like that? And yet, American Family Association was on the front edge of protecting those values that we now fight for today. And they've been successful in it. Whether it's been through what they do with entertainment or what they do on radio or what they do even with young people and tours in Washington, D.C. So happy 40th anniversary to AFA. Keep up the great work.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, President Trump announced a course correction on Afghanistan. It's not the one he promised as a candidate, involving a withdrawal from that long-festering sore of an Islamic civil war. Fortunately, neither is it the double-down option initially proposed by National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, to send 50,000 more troops to Afghan battlefields. Mr. Trump signaled instead, "We will go on the attack in Afghanistan and pressure Pakistan using a condition-based strategy, not arbitrary troop levels or artificial deadlines." Interestingly, by not setting the numbers of additional U.S. military personnel he'd send to the region, the president has left the door open to yet another option to be executed later, if not now, using a relatively small number of CIA agents and contractors to help Afghan forces destroy the Taliban and other jihadists. We may yet wind up there, and should. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Democrats are looking at the map of midterm races on the horizon and dreaming of winning way more than the two dozen seats they need to take control of the House.
We are building the largest battlefield in a decade.
The Democrats want to flip 80 House seats, including these 23 held by GOP members in districts Hillary Clinton won, a plan Republicans say sounds familiar.
Just 3 weeks before Election Day in 2016, Nancy Pelosi was on TV saying they'd take the House back, win 30 seats. We're still in the majority.
The GOP is now trying to expand that majority in a dozen districts where voters just picked a Democrat for Congress and Trump for president. Experts say in this fight, Democrats start at a disadvantage.
The map is slanted against them in terms of how the districts are drawn and how their coalition is pretty heavily dependent on some urban areas.
It's been that way since 2010, when Republicans won big in state-level elections and used gerrymandering to redraw some districts. The Supreme Court will soon decide if some states took gerrymandering too far, but for now, it's hard to turn the map blue.
We've seen over the last 8 years the number of competitive districts go from about 100 to about two dozen. And that, by and large, is the result of political gerrymandering.
The House gets the most Democratic attention because in the Senate, their membership may shrink. 10 Democratic senators are trying to get reelected in states Trump just won. And the Cook Political Report just moved four races that favored Democrats to the toss-up category.
The Democrats are hugely exposed in the 2018 Senate map.
But the House is in play, so both sides are brainstorming final arguments.
I can't wait to run ads against Democrats saying they want to abolish the VA, Medicare Part D, want complete government control of your health care, and want to raise $1 trillion in taxes.
The counterpoint from the left, Republicans had a chance and blew it.
200 days they have of unified, controlled government and haven't been able to get a single thing done for the American people. Democrats are going to contrast that with a better deal.
All right, Peter Ducey reporting from Fox News. And, of course, he's talking about what we've been talking about, the 2018 elections. He's kind of giving a different spin on it. The Democrats are hoping to take back the House. As Peter said, they may not have as much luck trying to get back the Senate. But, of course, I think the real thing that needs to be said here is it really doesn't matter to me. I'll just tell you, if the Republicans are the victors, what matters if we get people who actually love this country and will do something to preserve it. We have to be as intent about getting the bad people out, regardless of their party, as we do on getting the good people in. And so it's just a couple of things. We have something I haven't even discussed with you yet, but we will. There'll be plenty of discussion about it. We are approaching a crisis in the next couple of months in terms of our budget and our debt. In fact, Mitch McConnell said just yesterday, he declared in Kentucky at a speech that there is no way that the Senate is not going to raise the debt limit because we're just going to raise it. Because they don't stop spending. They just keep spending. Under McConnell and Ryan, they're spending more than they've ever spent. They never stop any kind of spending. And yet they are not willing to do anything about the debt ceiling or to face any kind of harsh realities. And so he promised yesterday that there's no way we will not raise the debt ceiling. And so that's one thing. And then, of course, just this is small in light of all the things that we face as a nation. There's going to be a fight over the border wall. You know, this is something the president promised when he was running, that we would build a wall. Remember that story? And you know that the congressional leaders, have ignored his request. They just haven't done it. It's as though he never asked for it, never promised it. The American people don't want it. And so there will be a fight over the border wall coming up in September. And I want to give you just another, I want to tell you something. This is actually encouraging to me. So bear with me. This is an article by Daniel Horowitz in Conservative Review. And it's a sort of a follow-up on what's going on in Alabama in that Senate race. So here's the deal. On Tuesday, Justice Roy Moore beat Senator Luther Strange. Remember, he was appointed to that seat. He is Mitch McConnell's handpicked candidate. Mitch McConnell poured $8 million, either $4 or $8 million into Alabama, into that race. Judge Moore edged out Senator Luther Strange 39% to 33%, and that's a very split field. And, of course, Mo Brooks came in with, I think, single digits. He was just barely double digits. He didn't do as well as I think many of us thought he would do. And he's also conservative, but Roy Moore is more conservative and more reliably conservative, much more skin in the game, much more principled, unbendable, unshakable. And I think the people of Alabama know that. And so now there was a poll done since that runoff on Tuesday. So I thought you might want to know what it says. It shows that Justice Roy Moore is leading Luther Strange 51 to 32. 17% of the Alabama voters remain undedicated. So Luther Strange did not gain a single point after that runoff. He has not budged. He hasn't gone up a single point. But Justice Moore has, of course, benefited from the fact that Mo Brooks is not in and that the other candidates are now not going to be in this runoff. So 51 to 32% so far. Moore is leading by 51 to 26 among those who voted for the other candidates and has particularly consolidated the support of Mo Brooks in the congressman's home base of Huntsville. Strange's woes are exacerbated by the fact that 68% of the Alabama GOP electorate identifies evangelical Christian. Moore is leading by 30 points among evangelicals, while Strange is only ahead by 3 points among the minority of non-evangelical voters. Moore's support is so broad that he even leads Strange in Mobile and Birmingham, while crushing him in the rural areas. Amazingly, contrary to public perception, Moore's strongest support comes from voters younger than 54. Judge Moore is leading by 50 points among voters younger than 35 and by 46 points among voters aged 35 to 54. Isn't that something? That's absolutely amazing. And then there's the issue of Trump's endorsement of Strange just fell flat. Even though Alabama supported Donald Trump, it did nothing to persuade them. 25% of voters said Trump's endorsement made them more likely to vote for Strange, but 51% said it made no difference. And 23% said it made them less likely to support him. But here's the kicker. What did influence the respondents in this poll? When voters were asked about McConnell's support for Luther Strange, 45% of Alabama voters said it made them less likely to support him, while only 10% said they were more likely to vote for him with the support of the party leader. Isn't that something? You think about that. That just shows you, doesn't it, how people feel about the leadership in the Republican Party. I'm not sure what they can do about it. I tell you what they can do about it is elect people who will oppose that leadership, like Justice Moore, like Mo Brooks would have also done that. But Justice Moore is the last man standing. He's not a friend to the leadership. Now, he hasn't taken them on directly, but you know he will, because he will. He's a man of principle. So that's what's happening. The good people of Alabama are trying to send somebody to sit in that seat in Alabama who will be a stalwart, and that's what we need to do in every state. And as I said to you before, even if your state, it's all in the bag, you live in a district where somebody's been serving for 100 years and there's no way you're going to get them out, you can still try. But you can go, you can help across state lines. You don't have to confine yourself to your own state. You might find a candidate in another state that really captures your imagination. You might even want to fly out there and knock on doors. You might want to give money. This is the time to get involved in these races, you know, because we have so much corruption. Have I said that before? I believe I have. A corruption on both sides of the aisle, and that takes me to a story that you probably have not heard, unless you just listen to Fox News. You know, Robert Menendez is a senator from New Jersey. He's been there for a long time. And he does a lot of bad things. The only good thing I can remember Robert Menendez doing was opposing the Iran deal. He was one of the few vocal persons on that, but they got to him and he hushed on that as well. But Robert Menendez is in big trouble with the law, and I want you to hear this story from Fox News. Let's listen.
Jury selection gets underway Tuesday in the bribery trial of New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez. It sets in motion a swirl of speculation about a shift in the balance of Senate power, less than a month after Republicans fell one vote short of repealing Obamacare.
The ayes are 49, the nays are 51.
Menendez is accused of using his Senate seat to help the financial interests of a friend, Dr. Solomon Melgen, who allegedly returned the favor with almost $1 million in gifts and campaign contributions. Menendez has said he's innocent.
These allegations are false, and I am confident they will be proven false, and I look forward to doing so in court.
His high-powered attorney, Abby Lowell, reminded reporters at the time of the Department of Justice's track record in winning political bribery convictions.
From former HUD Secretary Mike Espy in 1999 to Senator Ted Stevens in 2007, and 2 years ago in the case of Senator John Edwards, prosecutors at the Justice Department often get it wrong.
But even if he is found guilty, a bribery conviction would not force Menendez out of the Senate. He would have to voluntarily step down or be expelled by a two-thirds majority. If all Republicans voted for expulsion, they would still need 15 Democrats. Unlikely, given their desire to oppose President Trump's agenda. New Jersey's governor would then appoint Menendez's successor. But the gubernatorial election to replace Republican Chris Christie is only months away, and Menendez could agree to leave after New Jersey's next governor takes office.
They're going to elect a new governor, and the Democratic candidate is heavily favored in that race.
Further bolstering Menendez's chances, since he was indicted, the Supreme Court unanimously threw out the bribery conviction of former Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell, setting up an even higher bar for future political bribery convictions.
All right, that was Doug McElway. But do you see how complicated this all is? So even though Menendez is likely, this has been stirring for a long time, and usually, you know, by the time they bring it to court, have a grand jury, this is not like Robert Mueller looking for some Russian connection with President Trump. This is a situation where there is real smoke and mirrors. This is an actual crime. And so Bob Menendez is likely guilty of, in part, at least some of these crimes, or wouldn't have gotten to this point. But even so, you heard Doug say, that doesn't mean he would step down from his Senate seat. He would have to voluntarily give it up. And do you think for a minute that the senators sitting in Washington would vote, not even the Republicans, I don't think, would vote to get Menendez out, because they're a band of brothers. They're a band of very corrupt brothers, I might add. And they stick together, you see, because this is all about protecting themselves, not you and not the United States. So this is what we're up against, and that's why we have to get really good people in there to overpower the really bad people so that something good could actually take place. And I think it's also so that President Trump could have some sort of support, because right now he has none. I just don't think he has any. I think if Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan had a chance, they already are undermining him. They would turn on him big time. And that's what I personally don't want to see happen. I just don't. One other thing that happened this morning and that I haven't mentioned is that there was another high-speed train crash, this time in suburban Philadelphia. I don't think anyone has been killed. At least they may not since I went on the air. They were not killed. There were people taken to the hospital, including the conductor. It was a case of a train running into just an unoccupied car. And they said that it accelerated and then ran into it. Does that sound familiar? Remember, what was it, 2 years ago, that huge XL train, the conductor accelerated going around this curve and it spun out of control and all of these people were killed and injured? We talked about that at the time, like what happened? And actually, do you know what happened yet? Anybody know? That went quiet, didn't it? Very, very quiet. And then we have another disaster that happened on the high seas. The Navy destroyer USS John McCain collided, just happened to collide with a chemical tanker. 5 sailors injured, 10 missing. And by the way, you know, that just happened in June. Remember, we talked quite a bit about the USS Fitzgerald and a container ship which caused the worst naval accident in decades, left 7 sailors dead, and it was inexplicable. There was no explanation for why in the world the Navy did not, the ship, USS Fitzgerald, didn't see the tanker coming. So now we have another one. And it has to be noted that that means 2 of our destroyers in that area of the world are no longer able to protect us from anything that North Korea might do. Now, is that an accident? Is that a coincidence? Did they just run into those? I don't know. But something is wrong, because it seems to me the fabric of things, the way things are run, the integrity of people doing everything, whether it's navigators on a ship or whether it's people who, you know, run trains, the integrity of our nation has been so polluted and downgraded that we just don't have confidence. We're losing confidence on things that happen. We do have confidence, though, in God, because he never changes, same yesterday, today, and forever, always trustworthy. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.